Arteta! What a strike!
Finally home at the Emirates, and because it's behind closed doors, we won't have those pesky fans ruining the atmosphere. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Elliot Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. That's right, I've been told from time to time that the real problem with Arsenal is Arsenal fans. Well, won't have that problem for this game against Norwich as Arsenal return to the Emirates to pray? Well, maybe. You know, certainly entirely they're right. We have freedom of religion, but probably to play a football match against Norwich, riding high on a two-game win streak where we have played arguably the best football that has been seen in England for years and years and years. This is a preview match for Norwich, and the format we follow here is we take a headline, we discuss it, and then we each pick a player we'd like to see come in and a player we'd like to see drop out of the team to sort of introduce maybe a tactical discussion of the game through that context. So, having said all of those words, which I'm not sure meant anything, Tim is on Twitter at Storbetto. Hello, Tim.
Hello there.
And Clive's on Twitter at ClivePAFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello.
And the obligatory thank you for being a patron, because we do indeed love you. I can tell you, as someone who has love in my life, that I love you arguably more than any of the friends or family that I share my life with. So thank you for that. Okay, so let's start with the headline. Normally we'd each pick a headline, but I think there's one that's kind of interesting today. So we'll just discuss that one to kind of narrow and focus the conversation. And Tim, it is the headline from Arteta's press conference. The quotes about Cedric Suarez, you may consider them benign at some level, but he does sort of reference things Suarez does and references them as being the best player in the squad at doing them, which I think is what sort of opens up the interpretation here. I want to read these quotes just real quick as context in case anyone hasn't heard them yet. He's a different quality in the fullback area than what we have, Arteta said. He's a gifted technical player and is probably the best we have in the final third to make the right decision and attack the box as well. He can play in a four or a five. He's a really good player with experience in the Premier League that can help us. So, Tim, pointed comments with maybe the ability to read far too much into them for the future of players like Maitland-Niles or especially Hector Bellerin?
I think they were, you know, if not pointed, he at least accidentally gave away what he thinks. I'm not sure it was an accident, because I think Arteta thinks about what he says, but they're definitely, I'm with you, they're not benign, they're very interesting. And I guess one of the reasons I personally find them really interesting is because I think a lot of us, myself included, have been looking at the Suarez deal, and we've been thinking, what does it mean for Bellerin? What does it mean for Bellerin's fitness? What does it mean for Maitland-Niles? What does it mean for Maitland-Niles' future? What does it mean about, you know, the age and the profile of player that we're investing in? What is the fact that Kier Jarabchian is his agent? What does that say? And the one thing I think that we haven't considered is that it's a player the manager really likes, and that the manager was like, yep, let's get him. Because, you know, Arteta was here in January when the deal happened. And look, we all know how it works nowadays. And it's not him doing all of the legwork with transfers. But, you know, you have to think that he at least signed that off. And when they decided to make it permanent, he signed that off too. Now, I guess a lot of us might have been thinking, again, in discussing the cerebral factors of the Suarez deal, we might have been thinking, well, what does that say about the finances? You know, maybe just the fact that it's an easy transfer, it's a free transfer, you know, he's probably not on enormous wages, it's just an easy deal to do. And the one thing that a lot of us haven't considered is that perhaps this is just a player Arteta really likes. And just because we haven't seen him yet, Arteta has, he's seen him at Colney. Now, I don't know how much full contact training he's been doing, but given that, you know, Arteta, we've had this debate, haven't we, about culture and things like that. He at least gets an idea of the man and of the professional. And he's obviously been taken by what he's seen. And you know, when you hear him say he is the best at attacking the box, you know, that's got to hurt Hector Bellerin, because that was, until quite recently, considered his real superpower. So to hear the manager say that, whether it was a slip of the tongue or by design, that he thinks that Suarez is better at that than him by implication. And, you know, maybe Arteta thinks that Bellerin needs that that bit of that bit of urgency. I'm not suggesting that Bellerin isn't a great professional or anything, but sometimes, you know, if a player's held down a spot for a long time and hasn't really been challenged, then, you know, maybe he's just looking to up that kind of sense of competition in the squad and kind of say to some of these guys who've had their shirts for 4 or 5 years, doesn't mean you've got it for the next 4 or 5 years. You're going to have to work for it. So, you know, it might not just be it, and it might be that Arteta thinks that it's not a fitness issue with Bellerin, that he thinks it's form. You know, we all of us, myself included, we project quite a lot. And this might be an Occam's razor type scenario. He might just have really genuinely thought, I really like Cedric Suarez. We know he's available. We can probably get him because we have a relationship with the agent. Brilliant. Let's do it. I think he's great. And go from there. So, you know, and it's weird, isn't it? We think and we analyze and we kind of project so much about these moves and these transfers that in this scenario, we've probably overlooked one of the more simple potential explanations for it. And you know, to bring it back to the Norwich game, maybe Arteta was asked the question directly, but you'd have to think that he's in line to start against Norwich.
Yeah, I mean, and at some point that's a good thing because Tim, like, we have signed him to a 4-year deal, and
we've invested in him.
Yeah, whether I like him or not, I don't know him well enough to like him or not. Whether I love Hector Bellerin and would prefer to see his future be at Arsenal long term as a starter or not, I cannot deny that having given this guy a 4-year deal and my opinion on squad building being that you shouldn't commit huge amounts of resources to back up fullbacks, we've got a pretty big interest in using the rest of this season to get a good sense of Cedric and see if he can be the right back for us. I'm not saying that I want him or don't want him to be the right back for us, but I am saying that based on squad building philosophy, we've invested enough in him that it probably makes sense to see if he can be that. You know, age notwithstanding, which is another issue for a squad building discussion down the line. Clive, I mean, how do you react to these quotes? And I mean, you have been critical of Bellerin recently. Do you think we will now get a chance to see Cedric as having a chance to take hold of this position?
Well, after my ranting abuse at Bellerin a couple of weeks ago,
Badly. I mean, terribly, like to the point that I thought I should report you, but we don't have like an ethics board or anything. So.
I think I may have raised my voice by about one tick or something. I don't think it's nothing too bad, but
you were frothing at the mouth, as I recall. Yes.
But basically, I went away and thought, let me think about this a bit more. And I went away and did my normal YouTube study of Cedric and to see what it's all about because the contract situation was growing.
I am going to buy you a Y Scout subscription so you can get access to more video than just what YouTube has.
Yeah, I need to do this. I need to do a bit more than my YouTube stuff. But so I had a little look at him and I spoke about this with Andrew on the podcast and about potential of us, you know, using him going forward. And what I realized was straight away that he plays on both sides. I thought, okay, I didn't know that until a couple of weeks or so. But then there was a bit on the video where he got the ball on the right-hand side, did the shake and bake, and he switched it with his left foot the full breadth of the pitch, literally, one side to the touchline. I thought to myself straight away, I have not seen Arsenal fullback do that for a long time on their wrong foot. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I looked at it, I thought, technically, he's right there. He's very two-footed when he dribbles with it, inside and outside, both feet. Well, this is interesting, and we'd all agree, our technical level as a team is really quite low at the moment. It's really low. And this guy has got that technique in tight spaces, and he's got the experience of when to join in. And I thought that was quite interesting. Then you start to think about squad management, and you think about Kalashnik going, you know, if he goes off the wage bill. And then you think, well, actually, we've got a situation where we could live with, you know, one or two right back, depending on which one you like or which one the management like. You could have one left back in Tierney, and this guy support both sides, and with Saka there as well, to add an extra left back. We're not a bad situation suddenly, and we potentially could sell someone and make 20-odd million pounds and use that in other areas. So I did not dislike this. I wasn't sure about the initial, you know, the loan and the cost and the money that we spent so far. But, you know, it is what it is. And so, but from a footballing perspective, he's okay. And then you think back to this whole situation with fullbacks. The first thing Pep did once he got his feet under the table was buy three fullbacks. He bought Danilo, who played both sides, you know, a left back and a right back, you know. So, and he had his primary fullbacks, and he got rid of Sagna, Clichy, and was it Kolarov, I think, were the three that he got rid of, and he replaced them. So it's a high usage position, it's a high effort position. I was not against it fully, and I'm not saying he's going to play, but I can see his value to the squad. And there's a situation where you get an experienced guy in that can do a job for you in a key position, because fullback now is really, really important. If you don't have a good one, you get exposed there. So there is a plus side to that. That's looking beyond the agent stuff, where the negativity is still there and the mistrust is still there. Football-wise, the boy can play. He's not a mug. He's got a couple of medals from, well, he's got his Euro, was it 2016 when Portugal won? He's got that, and he was a part of that team all the way through. So, yeah, he has got some pedigree. I don't think he's going to let anybody down when he plays, if he plays against Norwich.
Mm. So, smart clubs do smart things and dumb clubs do dumb things. And dumb clubs are bad and smart clubs are good. And that's why you can look at the table and you can pretty clearly see the smart clubs and the dumb clubs. I think we are where we are on the table because, by and large, we're a pretty dumb club. It gives me no pleasure to say that. We do dumb things. And my problem with this is not about Cedric's quality and never has been. It is a question of what we are trying to achieve as a club. How do we get better? How do we increase our talent level at key positions? How do we sign and secure the young talent that we have like Bukayo Saka and make sure he stays at the club long term? Excuse me. Now, here's why I'm making that rant. Hector Bellerin may not be the future at right back for Arsenal. Hector Bellerin's on a long-term deal, and he's just 25. He'll turn 26 in the middle of next season. Trying to sell him this summer off the back of rehabbing from an 18-month injury that he hasn't fully come back from would be crazy. You're going to get a fraction of what the player's value would have been just 18 months ago and what it might be 12 months from now. Okay, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, we own him very cheaply. You know, we didn't have to buy him, and he's not on big wages, and he's shown that if he buys in, he presents a really interesting alternative option to Hector Bellerin. So you have two really interesting players at that position, neither of whom strike me as being able to secure big fees in this upcoming window for different reasons. So what we have now done is we have committed 4 years of wages and a fee, well, no fee, but, you know, loan fee, 4 years of wages to a late prime, end of prime player who will expect to play, who is an international, who will be on not insignificant wages, who pushes Maitland-Niles either out of the club or down the pecking order, or Bellerin out of the club at a time when he has no real saleability because he's just come back from injury. What I find astonishing is that, and anybody who talks about any of these players when they come back from injury, there's always an appreciation with Rob Holding. I had this big injury. He's just come back. Give him time. Hector Bellerin was a really, really good player before the injury. This is a really, really major injury. And the same arguments for giving Rob Holding time have not been made for Hector Bellerin. I'm not arguing he's been great since he's been back. I am arguing that he is a great player who is just coming back. And now we're potentially creating a situation where we have to sell him at the ebb of his value because of injury, or we have to relegate him to a backup role, thereby destroying his value, again, for a guy we've committed to long-term, and further push Maitland-Niles down the pecking order. So we have litigated that part of it probably to death, but it's just so important that I restate this isn't about whether Cedric is good enough. And so, Tim, let's say Cedric does play and he's really good and we're really excited about his potential. Do we create a situation where Hector Bellerin becomes the obvious asset to sell? And are you sort of disappointed, A, that that's happening because he's a likable guy, and B, that it's happening at a time where he wasn't given the space to recover from this injury, and he's probably not at a particularly good moment to be sold from an asset value standpoint?
I mean, on an emotional level, of course I'd be disappointed because I really like Hector for the same reasons a lot of people do. But if he has to go as a footballer, he has to go as a footballer. I'm not as sentimental as others on that. I wanted us to sell Thierry Henry before we did. You know, there
are history's greatest monster, just to be clear.
I've always suspected as much. But yeah, I mean, as to the point of whether it's, you know, whether he was given the chance to recover from injury, you know, yeah, maybe. But sometimes things happen, like sometimes things just have to happen at the time they have to happen. And there isn't a great deal of value in this Arsenal squad. And if we could extract some from him and we end up with Suarez and Maitland-Niles, you know, then I'm not saying this is what I do necessarily, but I wouldn't necessarily say that, oh, that's an appalling decision. If that's the road we have to go down, that's the road we have to go down. So on a visceral level, it would be disappointing. But I guess this is also where you have to kind of go with the information that we don't have, like on the training ground and maybe the physical numbers on the training ground. You know, are they going to have to make a call as if to say, look, this guy isn't coming back? Maybe, you know, he didn't. I thought there were reasons for it that weren't always his fault. But before the injury, he wasn't prime Hector Bellerin either, I don't think. And at some point, you know, maybe someone has to make that call and based on more information than I have. And if they do, then, you know, I'd live with that. I'd really like it not to happen, not just because I like him as a bloke, but I really think there's such a good footballer there. I was so excited when he came into the team, and I was so happy to see him kind of keep the shirt. I really thought he earned it, and I was looking at him and I was thinking, yeah, this could be like the Ashley Cole we never quite got to have in the end. And you know, maybe injury's done for that. Maybe, you know, different players peak at different times. Like, you know, a player's journey is kind of varied. Maybe again, I'm not saying I think this is the scenario, but it may just turn out that he needs to move. You know, he's been at the club a little while now. He came in 2011, and it could just be at the age of 25, he needs to go somewhere else. It's a bit like, you know, when you watch Cazorla playing well for Villarreal, and I see a lot of people
saying,
and
your heart breaks into a million pieces, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I understand it. I see a lot of people saying, oh, why didn't we keep him? And then there's just a part of me that thinks, I don't think he'd have done that at Arsenal. I think, you know, he's kind of back home, isn't he? And, you know, probably living like quite a nice life in Valencia, and he probably just needed that move for that to happen. Like, I'm not sure, not so much like it being an Arsenal or a Premier League thing. He probably just needed to move as well. He probably just needed like a clean break and a change of scenery. And that happens to players sometimes. And whether that's happened to Bellerin, I'm not saying that firmly at the moment, but if it has, it has, and we'll cope with it. And if it has, at least we've got, you know, assuming Maitland-Niles, like we're assuming a lot about Maitland-Niles, by the way, like about him not wanting to play at right back. I'm not sure he's ever said publicly firmly, I will not do that. I'm pretty sure he said something, you know, certainly in training and maybe a bit publicly about that's not where he sees himself. But I think a lot of people are saying he's refusing to play there, which is, I think that's an assumption. But you know, if we end up with Suarez and Maitland-Niles for the next couple of years, then we do. Like we're going to have to make some uncomfortable decisions. And if this is one of them, this is one of them. And if anything, maybe a little bit counterintuitively, I might start to think, okay, Arsenal are making hard decisions here, and, you know, fingers crossed, that might mean that they're getting a bit smarter.
Yeah, the only thing I would say in response to that, Tim, is we'd be making a hard decision that we forced ourselves into with a move that I don't understand. Now, the fact that I don't understand it doesn't mean it's wrong, but you see what I'm saying, right? Like, the decision to move on from Bellerin, for example, is a decision we may have to make by dint of the fact that we have signed a post-prime player to a four-year deal on pretty solid Premier League wages when we have two viable right-backs in the squad already, who are younger, owned cheaper, well, you know, in terms of sunk cost. I don't know. Clive, why don't you finish this off before I start going down a cul-de-sac?
Yeah, we never actually thought that Bellerin might actually want to leave. You know, he might just think, maybe my time's up here and I want to go, and I'd agree with the club that I would go.
Does he strike you as someone who would want to go, though? I mean, he seems to love London and the scene there, and he, you know,
I don't know.
He's got that Cockney accent.
I genuinely don't know, but it could happen. He might just want to try something else. I mean, your sporting years like dog years don't last forever.
Mm,
yep. You might want to go and try something else. I mean, why wouldn't you? He's a man of the world. You can see it. You have a little chat with Ivan Gazidis. He's playing for AC Milan. It's not the worst place in the world to be, is it? So really, it's like these things happen. They don't always go to our timeline. And then you look at Maitland-Niles, and he's changed his agent, and he's an agent that normally rips people out of clubs. Maybe that's something they're looking at as well. They could be looking at two of them go. And there's a young kid at West Ham, an 18-year-old kid there, has got a high potential that's on a free transfer. They could be looking at bringing him in. He's 18, 19, playing the Premiership already, and they could be using Suarez to build somebody like that. We don't know the whole plan yet. We really don't. And I totally agree that, you know, we're gonna lose some brothers here, mate. We're going to lose some people that we really, really like. And it's a situation that we've pushed ourselves into because we're thick, right? But that's been going on for half a decade.
Yeah.
We are where we are, and we want the club to turn this around, don't we? And it's gonna be painful, but we've got to try to trust at the moment till the whole plan becomes more or becomes less opaque, shall we say.
Yeah, and let me be clear about a few things, right? No player is sacred. I have said this a lot, and I really do believe it, even if I have players that I like. But making hard choices and moving on from players should be based on good squad-building decisions, right? So, like, it may be in our best interest to move on from certain players we really like, Bellerin among them. But doing it because we've made a questionable squad move that forces us into it is not ideally how I'd like it to happen. So, for example, like moving on from Aubameyang may be the right decision. It really might be. But moving on from Aubameyang because we go into the market and buy a 37-year-old striker wouldn't be the right decision. You know what I mean? Like, I know that that's an exaggerated example.
By Roger Miller.
Yeah, right. Well, so I'm saying that, like, getting younger, getting more talent upside, you know, making the most of that upside so that we can build a squad that has a long-term path to success and real success, not just like getting back in the top four. I do want to do that. And that may mean moving on from players we really like. I just think this move is sort of a sideways. If it's not a backwards move, it looks like a sideways move. And I also think
can
it's interesting.
One,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Elliot. Last thing. I did feel that we never really had a backup to Bellerin for many, many months, if not a year. And it was 1 year that he played almost every game. And eventually...
Yeah, just ask Debussy about it.
Yeah, I think it was... I'm trying to think. I think Debussy was the injury, but I think maybe Chambers was away on loan. There was a period where we did not have a backup right back.
Mm-hmm.
And he was literally playing every game and doing really well, by the way, until eventually he wore out. Right? And his knee collapsed. There was no one near him. He just collapsed. We need that level of, I always say about protecting careers, we need the level of backup. It's important that we have it. You know, it really is to allow these players not to get those crucial injuries. We've been unlucky with injuries, with the collisions, etc. But some of these ones, I call them fatigue injuries. I think him and Wilshere are two players that I felt we overplayed when they were young, definitely in my opinion.
Mm. All right, well, let's move on from this. I think it'll... We'll see where this goes over time. But, like, the most important thing now is that Cedric is good, right? I mean, he's with us now. So a lot of this is post hoc analysis. And what's important now is that he's good. So I hope he is good. And I think we'll get a chance to see him. And that leads us into the actual game itself, because this is a preview of an actual game. Not that these preview pods ever really wind up talking about the game. So let's talk about the game, Tim. Norwich at home. Who needs to come in first? Who needs to come in? Why do they need to come in? How are they going to help us by coming in? All of the coming in related analysis, please.
Yeah, sure. So my kind of first pick. So I think there has to be a measure of rotation for this game, just because of what we've got coming up on the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
Norwich are quite a confused team at the moment. Since the lockdown, they've been playing different formations, trying different styles, taking players in and out. Daniel Farke has arrived at the Emery stage of, fuck me, I'm just going to try something different and see if it works. They've played something like four different formations in their three games so far, and they've been switching around. So it's really difficult to read how they're going to play. But one thing that is quite significant is it looks like Max Aarons isn't going to be fit at right back for Norwich. And he's, you know, he's a player that will play in the Premier League next season, put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of their kind of their best performers, and even though Norwich look absolutely doomed, you don't usually get a lot of change out of him at right back, but it looks like he's not going to play. So what we do on the left hand side will be quite important. Now, that might interest Aubameyang, who had, you know, who sat out the Sheffield United game. Although you could make a case for him to sit out this one as well because of the four games we've got coming up. I'm not sure I'd take this that lightly. But so what we do on the left hand side is going to be really interesting, and I think we have to rest Bukayo Saka. I'm not having him as my out, by the way. I did that on the last pod. And so that opens up, I think, an opportunity for someone on the left. And I'd really like to see Reece Nelson given a go in this game. He's not really featured much since lockdown. I think he came on at City and he came on at Brighton and, you know, hasn't seen any minutes since. And, you know, just leaning into the discussion, I guess, we had on the last podcast about, let's see what some of these young players can do. Even if we don't want to make definitive judgments on them in August, let's see what Reece Nelson can do. And I quite like the idea of him on the left-hand side, I must say. I do think that, you know, he's quite a tactically intelligent player, and I guess I've thought of him more as someone who can hold the width on the right. But yeah, I'm quite interested in the idea of him on the left. Kind of cutting in. I think he takes up quite good positions in the area, and we saw that a little bit at Hoffenheim, and perhaps we don't see it as much when he's asked to do that kind of really holding the width of the pitch piece. So if we've got, you know, Tierney or Kolasinac or whoever plays at left back kind of really keeping the width on that touchline, really like to see what Reece Nelson can do, perhaps in that kind of inside left forward kind of channel. And you know, look, if it doesn't work, there's other players we can bring on. You know, we can bring Saka on. If Pepe doesn't start, we can bring him on. If Aubameyang doesn't start, we can bring him on. There's plenty of things we can do if Reece Nelson has done nothing after 60 minutes. But I think, first of all, there has to be a measure of rotation. Second of all, I think we need to see... We've seen a bit of Willock. We've seen a lot of Nketiah. We've seen a lot of Saka. Let's see some of Reece Nelson as well. So he's my in.
I like it. And I also just be curious to see what he has to offer. He's the player that I think hasn't really had his chance to impress yet. So that'd be good. Clive, do you have a different shout for player?
Yeah,
to come
that's
in?
A good, that's a good shout from Tim.
Dog
I like to see Aubameyang. Yeah. My son just come in from football. I like to see Aubameyang play, to be honest, because I think he must have been sitting there thinking at the weekend, oh, I'd love to be here today. We're springing around this pitch like gazelles. If I was on the end of this, it'll be fun. So I'd like to see him come in. Fair enough, Norwich is a team that I sort of know quite well. Max Aarons, should I do the patrons, some inside gossip?
Yeah, sure, please.
Right, Max Aarons, young lad from Luton, so I live about 5 miles from Luton, so I've watched him play for many years in the academy. Then he went to Norwich as a 14-year-old. His agent is one of my best friends. His agent is Mitchell Thomas, who's an ex-Luton and Spurs player. And so I've been following his career for a very long time. Spurs came in for him last summer for around 30 million, and he decided to stay, actually, because he wanted to stay in Norwich. And then he's had a bit of an average year. Yeah, I think he's feeling he regretted that. Spurs lost Trippier. You can see what Spurs were going to do, you know, to just replace him with the money sort of thing, and it didn't quite work out. What's going to happen to him this summer will be interesting. Arsenal have definitely been involved in that conversation. Whether it will happen or not, I'm not too sure, but they were definitely involved. In that. And so that's an interesting one. And the other fallback, Jamal Lewis, again, comes from Luton. At Luton's academy, went to Norwich. Not via the same agent, but they're at Norwich now. And they both went to Norwich because the academy director at Luton went from Luton to Norwich, and he plucked out two of the gems from Luton's academy in those two kids. Jamal is an ex-athlete, and my daughters and family and my son, they actually train with his mother, who's an athletics coach. And she's an elite athletics coach, and she's brilliant. And basically, Jamal could have gone to Athletics. His sort of cross-country times when he was young was significantly right up there with Mo Farah. So he's a very talented athlete. Went back to football at 16, and he's doing very well for Norwich at the moment. He's a year or two older than Max Aarons. And so they're a team that I watch very, very closely because of those two boys. And I agree to what Tim's saying about the formation changes. But I also agree that they are a really good football side, and we've been quite unlucky. A couple of players in Hernandez and Buendia that were really shining in the Championship, that I think Hernandez had a lot of injury. He used to play in front of Jamal. He was a really good foil for him, protector. He's not been there. Buendia's done okay in bits, but he's not really shone, whereas in the Championship, they could not win without him. So it's an interesting thing where you have a really good young side that can't quite bridge the gap. There's a lot of talent there, like Ben Godfrey and Todd Cantwell. Did I hear something about Todd Cantwell's agent is in some way involved with some of the Arsenal players? Similar, there's a link there. I think he's an Arsenal fan. There's some sort of link there. Mm-hmm. So one to watch with that guy. He's a talented kid. So yeah, I from in and out where the conversation was started, I like to see Bamiyang come in because we have to beat them. I love that. I love Norwich as a side, but we need the points, right? I don't love them that much. So I want to see Aubameyang come in and just hammer them into the ground, I'm afraid. And maybe we can pluck off some of their players because they got a lot of talent in that club. You know, Ben Godfrey is another one who is a really talented young defender, but, you know, Norwich want a lot of money for him. So, yeah, they're a nice side, but let's just hope we take them apart.
Yeah, and I guess I would say I'd like to see Mesut Ozil come in. I know it's not going to happen, but we haven't been very good at progressing the ball through the middle of the pitch. We've discussed that a lot. I don't think we've been getting players between the lines as effectively as we could, but it would be really interesting to see him in there, maybe even with Saka playing that same role and let him be one of the eights, so to speak. But I'd just like to see, you know, he loves to show up at the Emirates on a warm day when the going is easy and play well. This game could be the perfect kind of game for him, and just to drop in between the lines, collect and distribute quickly, move the ball a little faster, a little extra service for the front line. I would love to see it. I don't think we will, but you know, I think, look, whatever you think of Mesut Ozil, I think at this point most people are out on Mesut. Sure looks like he's going to be here for that final year next year, because I don't know how we move him. And if he's going to be here and we're paying him as much as we are, even if you don't like the guy, get something from him. I mean, how does it help the club to get nothing from him? It doesn't. Not when we're paying him what we're paying him. So, you know, and I know there may be a back injury. Maybe that's true. Maybe it isn't. But if he can play, this is the game for him to play. And I mean, if he goes this summer, I think that'd be best for everybody. But if we can't get rid of him, we might as well find places to use him. And at home to Norwich on a warm day, that feels like the place to use Mesut Ozil. And just let him do Mesut Ozil stuff if he can still do it at all. Tim, someone you'd like to see drop out?
Yeah, sure. So along the same lines, in the interest of rotation, Granit Xhaka.
Oh, you picked mine, you son of a...
just because, you know, he's again, it's that two things can be true at the same time. As much we know his flaws, he's very important. And we've got four massive games after this. And, you know, Norwich, though, Cantwell and Pukki are the only ones who have more than one goal for Norwich this season. So, you know, and so at the base of that midfield, I think there's other things we can do. If Guendouzi is off the naughty step, play him there. If he's not, play Maitland-Niles there. And again, you know, it's in the interests of that. Let's see what players can do. Like, look, if we play Guendouzi there, I'm not suggesting that's going to like make or break his future. But if he's still persona non grata, play Maitland-Niles there. You know, like, just give it, you know, Norwich at home. Come on. Like, he can surely handle that. And, you know, he played Maitland-Niles at right wing back away at Sheffield United, which is a really demanding game to play, particularly given how Sheffield United attack through their wide players. And so, you know, so we can't have entirely 100% given up on him. We just can't have. Otherwise, I just don't believe we'd have started him at right wing back against Sheffield United if that was the case. So, purely in the interests of rotation. I also think the one thing Norwich have got is they've got a lot of mobility in that area of the pitch. They have Buendia, they have Cantwell buzzing around behind Pukki. And, you know, they're not Norwich don't. Well, they tried to do this against Southampton. It didn't work, but they don't play a lot of, you know, long balls up to a big man. They try and hit the channels for Pukki. And, you know, so having a slightly more mobile option than Xhaka in front of the defence is probably no bad thing anyway. But yeah, largely it's just Xhaka's going to be a really important player for the next four games. We've got to manage him. He came back from injury. He's come back a bit early from injury, which always makes me wonder how, you know, like pretty much no player is ever 100% fit. But, you know, is he 90% fit? Has he been 80% fit? And have we rushed him back a bit just because he's so important, probably to some degree? So, you know, drop him out of this. Yeah. But, you know, drop him out of this game. And yeah, either put Guendouzi in there, or if not, let's see what Maitland-Niles can do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go down another cul-de-sac with my thoughts on Granit Xhaka, but like, yeah, the extent to which there is some cognitive dissonance for me where I acknowledge the extent to which he has become very important to us. And at the same time, I'm not sure that I rate him as being very good. So that's not ideal. Clive, who would you drop out?
Lacazette. Yeah. I'd drop him out. Mm-hmm. I'm just naming people because
I think that could happen. Yeah.
So I think he's struggling for a little bit of, you know, confidence. Obviously, he's just not moving very well. It's just not happening for him at the moment. So sometimes by taking him out, but maybe bring him on towards the end to the, if we're doing well, the good time goals, you know what I mean? The second and third goal would be nice. That might bring him back, so but just not from the start. I think, you know, looking at Norwich, what they do, they are very much a footballing side. And so they will play through the thirds. I've watched them a lot, and they lose a lot of goals with turnovers in the, you know, going for the centre of the pitch on the first phase, and they go out to the wings in the second phase. So I think it's an opportunity to steal the ball early. So I'd actually play, if I was setting this team up, with that in mind, and a little bit what Arteta said today, he mentioned the word diamond. I thought, that's exactly what I would do, actually. I'd go 4-diamond-2 in this game, and I would pack the midfield with runners and pressers, and I'd move across there in a diamond shape and just track the ball and win it. That Norwich will always play in and play out. They've got a problem with Aaron. They've also got a problem with their centre-half. I think he got sent off in the last game. His name's Closer, something like that. And Closer, I think it's a German name. So yes. They've got another centre-half, mate. His name, is it Hanley? Brant Hanley or something like that?
Hope you're not asking me.
Grant Hanley. Yeah.
Grant.
Yeah.
I went Brant. Thank you, Tim. Grant. Well, me and him wear the same size shorts, which is not a good look for a professional footballer, right? He can't run, and he's always on the limit in the championship. If they play him, I would play Aubameyang, and I'd play Nketiah, and I would run his socks off, literally run his socks off, and I would just press around those players there. They always want to play. They're a lovely side, but they'll always want to play into that pivot at the base of the midfield, and I think we could take the ball early and then go at them that way. So I would have two forwards, actually. I'd play a 4-diamond-2. And just play it for this game and play very much in their area and win the game.
I like your last point.
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say, like, a little bit of team news on the Norwich side is that basically they've got a big centre-half crisis. They've got another one suspended. And it looks like Farkas said in his pre-match press conference, he'll either play Jamal Lewis, the left-back, in there.
He's a lovely lad, but he's not a centre-half, mate.
Yeah, or he said, or I could change the formation. So they might go three at the back. But I think, if anything, that just that illustrates your point even more. Go for their defence.
Yeah,
yep, absolutely. Yep. Well, so to that end, the guy I'd like to see drop out is Kolasinac. I don't think we need to play a back three in this game. I hope we don't. I understand why Arteta used it in the last two games. In his pre-match press conference, he alluded to it being something that we can do, but I don't want it to be the thing that we fall back on. You know, I look at the Emery era, and one of the worst things that happened to Emery is he had a little bit of success playing with the back three, and so he just stuck with it because he didn't know what else to do, and I think it made us worse. I know we just won two games using it. I don't think it should be the going forward strategy. I don't think it will be. And Kolasinac is bad at football, so the combination of not wanting to see the back three and not wanting to see players who are bad at football means that I would drop him out. It lets us go to the back four. You can get back to that sort of initial thing we were doing with Xhaka dropping into the first phase of play if he wants to do that. And I think it lets Saka get back to, well, I think he's been great at the position he's been put in, back to his more natural position at left wing with Tierney overlapping. So that's what I do. And I agree with Clive that I think we should try to win the football game. So I hope we do that. I think that's good enough. 40 minutes. Any last word? Someone had a word? Yep. Anyone?
No, I'm just laughing when you said that. Okay. Although I don't like the way he disrespected Maldini. I mean, Kolasinac there, because he's a quality player.
Tim, it sounded like you did have a final word there.
No, I didn't. No.
Mm-hmm. You didn't even give me time to take a sip of my drink with your non-final word. Okay, that'll do it. Tim's on Twitter. Mr. Berto, thanks, man.
My pleasure as always.
Clive's on Twitter at Clive BAFC. Then Clive.
Thank you very much.
My name is Alex Smith. I'm on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. We will have an instant reaction pod tomorrow. We will have a full match pod the day after that. We will have a preview pod the day after that. We will have an instant reaction pod the day after that. We will have a full match pod the day after that. And the world keeps on turning. So we love you and thank you so much for being a patron. It really does mean the world to us. Hope you can check out the Discord, by the way. Giant Gunner, who smashes it in the Discord on the regular, he posted some statistical stuff on Willock, which is really interesting. He did his Sheffield United stats review. Just lots of interesting content being created by people who are not us. So,
did the Willock stuff change anything for you, Elliot? What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, look, it did for me, and not to extend this podcast any longer, but yes, what I will say is that there are some players, and when we do our player evaluation pod that we discussed off mic, we'll get into this, but there's some players where their strengths catch your eye, and there are some players where their weaknesses catch your eye. And for me, Willock is definitely a player where the weaknesses I perceive in his game have caught my eye, but I probably need to rate his strengths more highly, and the data backs it up. Although I will say the passing sonars are interesting, and he compared them with Guendouzi's passing sonars, and they do give you a bit of context, I think, for what he does, how he uses the ball when he passes it, which still needs to improve. We'll get to that in another pod. Let's leave it there. I guess all I have left to say is we love you, and we'll talk to you after Arsenal 10, Norwich 0.